Tom Cazzola, pre- and post-game host on TSN 1260 for all the orders game, was down at the media avails today. And, Tommy, Dave Tippett didn't want to commit to his top lines. Where do you think Nugent Hopkins plays, with McDavid or Draisaitl tonight?
And I know you tried to get it out of him, and he wouldn't give it to you, Gregs, and I admire that. But I think the right thing to do is to put him with Draisaitl and Yamamoto. And I'm looking at this with McDavid coming back, and I would say just leave that line with Draisaitl, Nugent Hopkins, and Yamamoto together, because you know they're on the same page. They have this chemistry among the three of them that it just works. They all complement each other in different ways, and they've found a certain rhythm. They've been one of the most constant and reliable parts of this team for the last 2 months and a bit now. And to me, logically, I say leave them together, but we've seen Tippett, like he did a couple games ago, veer away from that, try some things out, get Nugent Hopkins with McDavid. My gut says he leaves Nugent Hopkins with Draisaitl and Yamamoto. I mean, clearly I could be wrong, but I think at this point, like you mentioned off the top here, even though the Oilers have a little bit of wiggle room, it's not like they have a ton. And this is an important game against a team that's rolling, and I don't know how much you want to experiment tonight.
Yeah, that's fair, and I would agree with you on that. I think it's I think it makes sense to do it. So we'll see what happens, but I think it's the right call to keep those three together. The interesting one is on the third pair in defense. A lot of Oilers fans were wondering why Caleb Jones was taken out of the game, and now I like Caleb Jones. I don't think it would have mattered much in that game against Vegas. The Oilers were just overwhelmed everywhere. Mm-hmm. And, you know, unless Caleb Jones was suddenly thrown on the pads, I don't think it would have mattered. But Caleb Jones has played quite well, and he when he's in, he'll play the right side. Now, I watched the optional skate today. McDavid was out there. He was wheeling. He looked good. Yamamoto, both of them are playing. But Russell and Jones are out, but not Benning. And so I don't really know what to read into that. Is you know, like if Benning wasn't playing, I would get the sense that he probably would have done the optional skate, just based on what I've watched over the years. So I kind of get the sense it's going to be one of Russell or Jones. And I know that they like going with veterans, but you know, I looked at Caleb Jones's 5-on-5 numbers, and obviously offensively he's better than Chris Russell, no question.
Yeah.
You know, and a lot of his points, though, and goals came playing with the Nugent Hopkins line here in the second half of the season, which makes sense. But when you're in that third pair, I looked last game, Russell and Benning, they didn't really, like, the two forwards they played the least with, Nugent Hopkins and Yamamoto, right? So I wonder if it just changes, and it's more not so who's the better offensive guy, but who's better fit for the system they want. And as a third pairing guy and a penalty killer, I kind of sense that they're going to lead more towards the veteran. What are your thoughts?
I'm in agreement with the whole veteran thing, and I've pointed out a couple of times, you know, keep in mind, as good as Jones has been and as he's improved throughout the season since the call-up and he gets the contract extension, like, you can see there's a confidence there, and there's nobody denying that. And there's nobody taking anything away from what Caleb Jones is starting to do as a National Hockey League defenseman. But we are getting into the nitty-gritty of the season. We are getting down to crunch time. It is almost the postseason. They're right around the corner, those playoff games are. And I think, you know, in certain situations, you want your guys that are veterans that have been there, that have played in those big games, and it doesn't rattle them necessarily. I'm not saying that Caleb Jones isn't calm, cool, and collected, because he generally is. But, you know, there's at times where in his rookie season, his first full rookie season, he's looked like a rookie. And it was interesting because Benning wasn't out there, was he, today? I didn't notice him out there. And that makes me wonder, too. He did get jarred a couple of times by Ryan Reeves, and then he took a puck up high on a shot, too. I wonder if he's a little banged up and decided to take the option, or if they're just resting him today because of that, and let him get ready for Friday, perhaps. But clearly there's a rotation here. I would roll with the veteran guys in a game like this, because, like you pointed out in your preview, Greg's, like, they're coming up against teams like San Jose and Anaheim right away here after this road trip, and Ottawa as well, that are kind of out of it. So if you want to keep guys fresh, like Dave Tippett has mentioned in this week's press conferences, then maybe there's your opportunity to keep everybody fresh, have a rotation going. But if you're trying to hunker down and get your best lineup out for these games, these really important games, especially right now, a conference game, then maybe you go with your veterans and let your guys that have, you know, done it and been there before handle the situation, as opposed to throwing a rookie to the Wolves a little bit.
Tom Cazzola joins us. Tom, we're seeing COVID-19 coronavirus. We've got the NBA game tomorrow night. The Warriors, they're not going to be playing with fans. Columbus home games now moving forward are not going to have fans. We do know what they said for the San Jose Sharks. They have three home games left in the month of March. So not only does it impact fans and their ability to go to games, but it is going to impact the teams and salary cap and stuff, you know, escrow, everything else. Like this could be very interesting. Last week there's talk about maybe an $84 to $88 million salary cap. That could suddenly change if you lose the revenue for 3 weeks for all the home games across the board, because you're going to lose not only the ticket prices, you're losing all of your food and beverages.
And your parking and all of the surrounding stuff, merchandising, obviously, as well. And keep in mind, too, Greg, especially with the National Hockey League, like, of all the major sports in North America, the top four, let's leave it at the top four. So baseball, hockey, basketball, football. The NHL still is the most reliant upon gate-driven revenue. And we've got a month of games, or just under a month of games left, and now all of a sudden it's looks like it's going to take a chunk out of revenue. I understand that, and I was reading the article and listening to the insiders today on TSN. I understand that there's certain provisions that teams put in place in regard to insurance, but these guys, the Dragers, McKenzie's, LeBron's of the world, they pointed out, like, even the wording in those insurance policies can change, and it can vary from team to team and policy to policy. So if you don't have your butt covered in an insurance policy that covers a disease like this, you could be in trouble. So I don't know necessarily like how much of the overall chunk of the league's revenue in, let's call it, 3 weeks worth of action could be affected and change the outcome of next year's salary cap. Like if there is an effect, Greg, and this isn't just like a week long or 2 week long thing. Could they just roll back to this year's salary cap? Like, could it have that much of an effect? These are all, like, questions I'm asking out loud to myself as I'm reading this. And then now, you know, if this thing continues to spread, because we've got a state of emergency in the New York area now, Pennsylvania on top of that. You mentioned Ohio and, of course, in California. Like, I'm curious to know how each one of those individual teams is affected, because, you know, the Rangers, that's a team that brings in a lot of money and they're paying into profit sharing and all of that. But then you look at the Devils and the Islanders, and I don't think they're anywhere near as profitable as the New York Rangers. So I'm curious to see the fallout of all of this. And it really seems like, from reading, listening to the experts, that this is just kind of the beginning of this whole thing, and we're going to see more and more dominoes fall as this thing goes along. But I'm so bad at math, Greg, and I don't know how to crunch the numbers, but I'm curious to know how much this has an effect on each team's overall revenue.
Well, it comes down to really the 50-50 split, right, of hockey-related revenue. And,
right,
it's estimated to be in excess of $5 billion. Now, that's where escrow comes in, because basically what's going to happen is if there's a rollback from here to the remainder of the season on certain games, what happens is then the players, they're going to have to increase their escrow, because there's still three paychecks due March 15th, March 30th, and April 15th.
Okay.
And in those, it might come down to the players, because the owners would then be losing all the gate revenue, right? And in order for them, if they're making less, then the players have to make less. It's right in the CBA. So it definitely has an impact on the players as well as the owners. And then ultimately the fans, right? Like you're a season ticket holder, and you have your tickets. They can't charge you for games that you don't get to go see. And
right.
So it'll be interesting to see. Like, I know Canada, I've been reading, and, you know, I try to read from reputable sources on this.
Of course.
And just because of the, you know, population size and different things, that Canada's not there yet, it doesn't mean we won't get there, right? Like, you do wonder if maybe Canada's going to tighten things up for visitors coming in rather than say, oh, if you have flu-like symptoms, go talk to someone. Like, I'm not sure that's necessarily you're putting the trust in them. Maybe we should just say, hey, if you're coming in to our country from somewhere else, you're going to get tested.
Yeah,
you know, that's just kind of how it goes. So I know some countries are banning travel for people to come in right now. In Italy, they basically shut down 70 million people. You can't leave or come in unless you got a real good reason. So this is now bigger than sports. No question about it. Most things in the real world are. But it will be unique to see. And I believe, Tom, that the one thing that might come out from this, like, I still believe at times there's some organizations, not all, some leagues, some organizations that at times take their fans for granted, just assuming that, you know, they're just going to keep paying. They love having the honor to pay for high ticket prices, right? Like, I do sense that sometimes. Like,
you're absolutely right.
You know, like, it's your luxury to be able to come watch us play. And now that there won't be fans, I think organizations, it's going to be like, geez, like, the fans really do make this an event. And maybe some always thought that, but until you see it with your own eyes, like, I'll be riveted to watch that Golden State game tomorrow night with no fans in the crowd.
So will I. And here's the other interesting element in all of this, too. So the areas that haven't been hit hard and haven't, you know, declared state of emergencies or are banning gatherings of over 1,000 people, if these NHL owners are concerned about that revenue that they're potentially losing, how many of them are looking at neutral site options in areas less affected? And to me, that's kind of a wild card thing. But I'm completely curious to see, you know, I heard the guys, the insiders talking about Stockton. I've been to that arena in Stockton. It fits like 6,000 people. It's really nice. Realistically, how much money are you getting back? You know what I mean? And how many arenas, like, could Saskatoon hold an NHL game? Probably. But are we going to get to that point, Greggs? And is that something that owners and people around the league are keeping in their back pocket as well?
That's definitely something to think about, and
yeah.
It'll be interesting to watch how it unfolds over the next few weeks for pro sports in North America. Obviously, we've seen a lot of cancellations in Europe, but now it's coming closer to home for both the NFL and the NBA. I saw Seattle Mariners have postponed their March games until later, or maybe they'll just be canceling them outright. So that's the preseason games, of course. So we'll see what happens. Lastly, quickly to the Edmonton Oilers, the Winnipeg Jets and the Oilers. That was one of the more entertaining games of the year, I felt, on February 29th. The Jets, when they were trying to make a comeback, really put it on in the final 6 or 7 minutes and kind of skewed a little bit the scoring chances. Up until that point, I thought it was pretty even in scoring chances. But the Oilers, how they played the last few games obviously has to change, Tommy. And they, like, the Jets come in as a team, they play up tempo, fast paced, and that Connor Scheifele Wheeler line, like, you know, them and McDavid went head to head, and, you know, McDavid coming off the flu, I wonder if Draisaitl gets a little bit of that, or it's still going to be McDavid Scheifele all night,
right? And the go power of power. You know what's surprising too about this matchup, and listen, both games, even that one back on October 20th, the 1-0 shootout shutout that Mike Smith picked up, like, they're trading chances, and there's so much high-end skill offensively between these two clubs. I'm surprised that we've only seen 5 goals scored, and then you could throw in the shootout winner from, I think it was Kyle Connor who picked it up back in October. Like, Greg's, there's so much potential. It's like a powder keg for offense to blow up between these two teams. And to see that, you know, although it was a highly entertaining game, lots of excitement, lots of chances at both ends, that it was just 3-2 on February 19th, or 29th, pardon me, really, really kind of, to a certain extent, shocked me. But if they go power on power and if the Oilers are leaky, then they're in big trouble. They have to buckle it down, get rid of that whole disconnect thing that we've been talking about for the last couple of days, because the Jets are rolling. They're hungry. They're desperate. They're on the outside looking in. And the other thing to add, too, is, listen, this is a team, yeah, with high-end skill, but Greg's, they've been there before. They know what it takes to get to the postseason. And they're liking what they've done on defense. They like Dylan DeMello. They think he's been a great addition. And it's kind of settled things down. Yes, that's part of their weakness. But this is a Jets team that you cannot take lightly. And like you said, Greg's, if this Oilers team plays anything like it did in the last few games, it is in big trouble tonight. This could be a wake-up call for the Oil.
Tommy, And we will chat with you later on tonight in the pregame show. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Greg.